Nou, goeiemiddag. Lunch gesmaakt?
Goed zo.
We hebben vandaag twee sessies al gehad. Het eerste ging over wat is... Sorry. I have to switch to English. So we had two sessions today already. The first one was all about Scrum. How do you do Scrum, and what are the advantages and the disadvantages, things to look at, and those things. The second one was about how, as a developer, can you do the Scrum and some best practices in that. So the next step in the ALM process is how do you deliver what the developers are building. That is something I will discuss right now. And well, one of the last steps is that the testers validate what is being built. And that will be the session after this. So it will be a long day, but a very interesting day, I hope. Well, who am I? Ewald Hoffman, an MVP from Visual Studio, ALM, and work for Avanade. I already told you about the process that you have, the requirements where it all starts, the PBIs and these things. Then go into designs, and I totally agree with Dennis that you need some designs up front. Then you go into the coding, and we already did that, and then the testing. So what are the roles? We have the business, the product owner, and they will be responsible for that part of the V model. Then we have our testers. The testers in my team look like this. They are responsible for that part. And who are developers and want to be as a role model on this V model? Who wants to? Nobody? Well, nobody should raise his hand. So he's responsible for technical designs, unit testing, and the coding. And what I'm talking about is the continuous integration, and that is on that. So the developer is building something for the tester. So what do we do now? So I see with a lot of companies, developers are building something. There's a huge wall for the testers, but also for the customer. And I just build something, they throw it very high over the wall and just see where it lands. And there's no communication between the different roles. So that's something Agile and Scrum should solve for you. And the build can help with that. What also happens is that when a developer builds something, how do you deploy to a test environment? F5, F6, Ctrl-Shift-B, what are the shortcuts to do that? And then Xcopy. Are there any other deployment mechanisms? Yes, there are. And just banging on the software without any strategical vision, just do something. Or just looking very needle in the haystack. Haystack, thank you. When you have your software and you pull something out of there, you do your refactoring, how does that affect the other things in of your application? So that is what is done. It's not in your company, it's not in your work, but I see it a lot of customers happening. Familiar? No, not familiar. Okay, this was my talk. See you all. So that's what we are challenging right now. One of the things you can use in that is continuous integration. This is a wonderful definition of continuous integration done by Martin Fowler. And I want to read it with you and highlight some things. So continuous integration is a software development practice where members of a team, we already seen that in Scrum, integrate their work, or integrate their work frequently. So that's frequent check-ins. Usually each person integrates, blah, blah, blah. Each integration is verified. There's the testing, an automated build. So that's what we are working on at this session, including test. So I will show you how you can do that. And Marcel will show you more details around testing to detect integration errors. So it's all about, again, that validation and detect errors as quickly as possible. Also very important when you have your sprint cadence, very rapid cadences where you find these things quickly. Many teams find that the approach leads to security. Reduce integration problems. Again, when you test a lot and do a lot of check-ins, there are reduced problems and allow a team to develop cohesive software, so the software that works together. So that's a very interesting definition by Martin. Oh, and there's also the word rapidly. So what do we want in the build? What do we want to see? It's the one of the previous slides with all the figures. That's definitely something we want to remove. So the answers we want to the questions we want to answer is it compiles. That's definitely something we want to check with that developers don't break any existing code. That can be because of the merges that come from the different developers. That it functions correctly, so we need to validate. That's a word that already passed this session a lot of times. And that it satisfies the standards. And we can do that with team build. Who is using today team build? Half the room. 2008, 2010? 2008 people? Okay. Migrated 2010, it's wonderful. Who's you doing 2010? Okay. I will do some demos on team build, and because of this room, I will do the introduction to team build first, and I will dive deeper into the team build so you can actually make it work for your situation. Are there any specific needs that you want, or problems that you currently have with a build that you would want to see in this demo? Anybody? No? Okay. Sorry? Okay, building a setup. I won't be able to actually do that, but I can tell you how you can do that. So when we're talking about it compiles, then what we want is a central build. Well, central build, I showed you the image of the desktop that we build and ship our products by just the control shift B. And we don't want that. We want a build server. That build server takes everything. And just using team build, you already have a central build. So that's great. The gated check-in. Dennis already told something about that. I want to go deeper in when to use it and when not to use it. Symbol server, it's very, very powerful. You can debug previous versions of your application. So the gated check-in, we already saw a small demo about the gated check-in. And so to recap, it basically just shelves the code changes you did and then build the latest version plus this shelf sets. That's shelf set. And then if the build is green, it checks it in. If the build is red, then it notifies the developer that it should do some rework. The gated check-in looks wonderful, but it has some disadvantages. The first thing I have noticed with teams that when you do a gated check-in, the changes you make are not immediately in source control. So if you, for example, do the gated check-in, you have two options. You saw with Dennis, you saw that the files were still checked out at your local system. So if those files are still checked out, and you are going to work on the same files, and you have a build break, then, well, which of the modifications you did are from the previous check-in, and which are from now? So it is sometimes hard to continue working on the same files. So there's a second option, where you say, well, do an undo checkout, and so you lose your changes done by the check-in. And then it also gives some problems. So that experience is not always the best experience. So that's the downside of using the gated check-in. And if you have a long build, for example, the gated check-in is also not very, very useful if it takes half an hour before your changes are actually in source control. You maybe want it faster. So maybe then you want to use the continuous integration and not the gated check-in. When I'm talking about continuous integration and gated check-in, maybe not everybody knows what it means. So let's get rid of my schedule and do the demo earlier. So we already have seen Team Foundation Server. We have over here our Team Explorer. The Team Explorer is, come on, close every window. Those windows. So we have over here the Team Explorer. The Team Explorer is the your entry to TFS, and you have the builds node over here. And in the builds, you can create a new build definition. And the build definition defines how we want to build. So we have. On the left side, and this is different from the build in 2008. You have the build definition name, just give it a name. And over here you can specify the triggers. And in the triggers, there are several triggers you can choose from. The manual, where you explicitly have to queue it. You can do the continuous integration. And the continuous integration, the rolling build, and the gated check-in, so all those three are triggered by a check-in. So in the you set the workspace over here, so what is the area that the build is running on, and if one of the items in the workspace is checked in, then a trigger comes when you have one of those continuous integration, rolling build, or gated check-in. So if I, for example, check in an item in my dev days 2011 or one of its subfolders, then the build will run if I specify one of the continuous integration, rolling build, gated check-in. Clear? Yeah, wonderful. So what's the difference between those? The continuous integration, whenever you check in, it is firing the build. It's great, but it's only great if you have a fast build. Because imagine that you have a build that actually runs for 30 minutes, and you have a team of 8 persons, and they check in very rapidly. They do it every hour, and well, there is a long list of builds that are queued and queued and queued, and the list gets too long. You can add multiple agents to be able to facilitate that. But you can also do rolling build. And then it will package them together. And when you select the rolling build, then it will not... when the build is running, and the trigger comes by, then it will say, well, those 5 builds on the queue, I won't queue it, but I will queue it whenever the build is ready, and then I will do those 5 check-ins in one time. So then you can better empty your queue. Not the best definition, but I hope you get it. And then the gated check-in we talked about, And then there is the schedule. And you can use that for your daily build or for your nightly builds. So in practice, what I do is have a very rapid build, continuous integration or gated check-in, and that build only does the compilation of the code, some quick verifications. It runs 5 to 10 minutes. And I do a nightly build, and in that nightly build, I run my unit tests, and I do the code analysis, and I do the compilation, and that may run for 2 hours. I don't care, because that's in the night. So that's how I set up normally my my build system. So we went to the workspace. So that's all the files and folders that you want to include in the build. Then some build defaults. The build defaults define which controller you want to use, so which basically which build machine you want to use, and a location where you want to store your files in, just a share. Then there is retention policy. You can tell the system what to keep. And then there is the process. And I will spend some time on this later on. So what do you see over here? First of all, and if you are used to the TFS 2008 build, this is a huge improvement. You can specify the there's a template. You see it over over here, and in the top, and then there are the variables for that template. In the in previous versions, you had one big file, and in there, you had all the variables and all the steps that it should do. And if you click on the show details, then you see that you can select multiple templates. So out of the box, there's the default there's the default template, the upgrade template, and the lab default template, and the custom template. That's the one I already created, and that's the one we will work on. And so you can select the solutions you want to build, the configurations you want to build it. So by default, it is taking the default configuration. So that's the configuration you have, the same configuration you have in the solution as you open the solution in Visual Studio. So normally that's the debug. And that's not the one you want to build. So remember that you specify the configuration in here. And now I'm ready to go. I'm done. I have created my first build definition. So I can save that. And also a difference between past and now is that it stores the variables in the database and not in a file on source control. So that's also different. And what is nice to know for the people who are going to migrate tomorrow, there are a few guys over here, there is a the upgrade template. That's the template where you can ask for you which folder contains the targets file. And then you can still use your old MS Build script to run by TFS 2010. And the lab default template, that's the template where you can integrate lab management with. And that's a total different topic that we won't touch today. But if you're interested in lab management, then you can attend the session on Friday morning that I will give. And I will show you how you can integrate lab management that handles all your environments in build. So now we have the default template. We have specified what we want to build. We saved it, and now we just queue it or check something in and just run it. And now it runs. I don't know if it really runs successfully. This is also the new interface for showing what's happening, and when it's done, you can see the summary. And in the summary, there are some interesting things. It tells you the warnings, what is wrong. You can see the log files, what is built instead of if you have errors. But it also shows you, if you do the association of the work items, what are the change sets that are checked in against this build, and if you attach the work items, which work items are associated or resolved by this build. And Marcel, you're not going to touch the impacted tests? Okay. There is something very nice that when you run a test that can be a unit test or something with the user interface test, and when it runs, it automatically attaches the methods that it touches to the test. And so when you modify some methods, it knows which tests are impacted. So you can test very, you can execute the tests that, no, only the tests you can execute which have modified code. English is difficult sometimes. But anyways, so that's really powerful, and I'm not going to touch that. So this is a very nice dialogue to show what's happening. So that was a long gated check-in thing. I only wanted to show the check-in, but the gated check-in, but I showed more. Well, then you have the symbol server. There are situations. So I have the minidumps and the debugging without latest version. There are two scenarios. The first scenario, the minidumps, is if you create some application and you have shipped that application to your customers, and the customer reports an error, and you are not able to reproduce it. That happens. So, yeah, how to solve it? Well, one way of trying to solve it is with the minidumps. And I will show you the demo later. But what you can do is open the task manager and right-click on the process and say, create a minidump. And the customer can send that minidump, which is quite big, but he can send it to you. You can open that minidump in Visual Studio, and it can use the symbol server to load the information of all the PDBs. So, sorry, but what is a symbol server? Let's start with that. So the symbol server is nothing more than a file system, file share, where it stores all the PDBs of the versions that the team build has built. So it is a library of all the PDBs, not only of the current version, but all of the previous versions. So when you have that minidump, and it says, well, I'm version 1.4, and you're already way beyond that, then it can find in the symbol server the PDB that was used by the customer. You don't have to ship the PDB to the customer, you only have to ship the allowance of the executable to the customer. So in that way, you can find the defect, what happened in there. And the same is with debugging without latest version. This is the same scenario, but now you're attached to a process. So you do more live debugging against the previous version. So we also talked about the validation, that it functions correct. So what we have over there, we have the unit testing. We have seen a lot of that already. We have something about the automatic automated deployment, where you can just put some pick up your the binaries that are built by team build and put them in an environment. We can smoke test. We can use the coded UI for that. So it's something that I will show, and we can even do some performance load testing and integrate that in team build if you want to. And we can also say that it applies to the satisfies the standards with code analysis, code metrics, and style cop. So that was all the theory. Let's go into the to demo. Leave it. So what we have over here are the two builds. We already saw that you had a build process template that you can use in your build to use. What I'm now going to do is modify the template. To be able to do that, and I'm not telling you it is very easy. The build template is Windows workflow. It's what you see over here. And TFS has some activities that you can use, as well as the workflow activities that you have. This is the screen I have, okay. And the toolbox is over here. So how Windows workflow works, it's pretty simple. It's just a canvas with a workflow. There are some activities. An activity are tasks that the engine is running. There are some default out-of-the-box activities that you can use, an if statement. Anything like that, you can use those, but you can also use the activities that were shipped out of the box by Microsoft in TeamBuild, and the template that is shipped out of the box is also it looks like this. So there's a lot in there already that you can use. So for example, when you want to let's say something. Write something to the build log. For example, if it is today, Monday. So we have an if statement. Then over here we have a condition, and in that condition you just specify a VB command. Where is my properties over here? That was the wrong F4. So the condition if, and now we have, because it is VB, we have VB.NET. So if today, equals, I don't know what it should equal, but it is about what you can do with this. So if it is today and a new date, time. And it is 2011. Come on. Month 4 and day 26. Then it should write a build message. And in that message, I want to say it is dev days time. And now I can save this template and I can run it. And it will execute this if statement for me, and it will write a build message. See? It's not 26th today. I don't know. So that is how you can just use the activities. But there is more with that. You are able to build the your own code activities. There are more interesting things you can do. For example, the what I want to show you is how you can increase, for example, the version number of your application. So we have the Solution Explorer over here. To be able to do that, you have to create a solution, and that solution has two projects. The first project has the only the XAML file in it. And the other project is just a class library, and that class library is having those code activities. So, for example, I have over here the increased assembly version, and this is just default Windows workflow. It has more than 10 lines, so I have to refactor it. First of all, you're telling that it is a build activity. And there's something, well, not really obvious. Here you specify your arguments. So those are the arguments that it is telling the outside world that you can give values to. So now I have what the mask is for my assembly file and in which directory I have to find it recursively. And I'm telling that this argument is required. And in the execute method, I tell what to do. So it's just walking. There are over here two lines. And that in arguments thing, that assembly info file mask, is not actually having the values itself. You have to extract it with this line of code, the context.getValue. And if you have that value, you can just iterate through all the file masks. Attributes in the assembly files, looking for all the files in the directories, and then it is overriding that on the on that sources directory. Just some regular extraction magic. And when I have this, that's basically what I want to execute on my build machine. But to be able to run it, I need some DLLs. There are a few DLLs. And you can find very good examples on my blog how to do that. These are the four DLLs that you need. And there is another thing that you need to... because how does the build machine knows which DLL to use by the template? So in the there are two places where you do it. First of all is in design mode. That's where we are right now. That's easy because we have a reference over here to my project, to my code activities project. But on the build machine, it needs to have access to my DLL. So they have found a solution in your build controller. So this is the window where you can find that. There's the properties. And in the properties, you can specify a path in version control where it can find all the assemblies that have code activities for my templates. So in my custom activities folder in source control, I have that DLL stored. I want to automate that. So what I've done is I have put in a post-build event. And in there, I'm first checking out, then copying it, and checking it in the file system again. So whenever I build the DLL, it is also stored in source control. So that's how I do that. So now I can now because I have that increased assembly version activity in the custom template, and that's I think somewhere below over here, I have this increased assembly version activity already added to this template. I have also a checkout and a check-in activity I have created. And over here you see the assembly info file mask and the sources directory. And it are, again, just arguments of this code activity. And I just give them some values. If I want, for example, I have a mixed team with C# and FEB, I want to be able for my developers to specify what file mask they use. There are arguments over here. And these arguments are the arguments that you will see in the build definition. So I have, for example, an argument blah, and that is something I can use over here. Instead of assembly, I can use that argument. And if I do that, then I can specify in the build definition what the values would be for the blah. And they will pass it into in my increased assembly version. Okay, so now I've modified the template. And we can use that to execute the builds. So we have, for example, that hello world added build definition. It is making use of process. It is making use of that custom template. So when I now queue a new build definition, it will run, make use of that new build definition. Sorry, build process template, and it will increase the version number. So over here, you see that it is really running the that activity. No. That's possible. Yeah, but you, there's a trick to not trigger it, and I think it is in here. So I have the activities and I have the check-in. Yes. So when you specify this comment, the no CI comment, then it tells the system not to do a CI. So that's how you avoid it. Are there any other questions from now? Yeah. Okay. Quick question. There is actually a post on my blog that tells you how to do that. So when you look at the the question was, now we have the version number of the product, we increased it. Is it also possible to have that in the build name? So when you look at the custom template over here, then you will see that, and this is the biggest pain when you're developing on these custom templates, that it takes a while before opening. But there is over here an update build number. This is the activity that modifies that that name, and you see that it is using the build number format, and that build number format and is over here. So this is the definition that it uses, and you can modify that, and if you have the version number, the increased version number in here, then you can use that. What I did is, if I recall correctly, is read the version number from the, I think even from source control, and then because I know what kind of increase mechanism I use, I increase it in there, then put it into the build for number format, because the problem is that this activity runs before you have the files on your source system. So that's how I do it. No, I read the assembly info file, the assembly info .cs file. I read from source control, and I read the version number in there. Then I increase it with one, and that's the number I use for my build name. Any other questions on now? No. So when we looking at the, I think it's over here, QS3. You see over here that my build agent does the increasing of the assembly info quite often on every build. So this is how you can modify your template, and you can do wonderful stuff with that. So with that, we also saw that it was possible to do the code analysis, and you can incorporate the code analysis very easily in your builds. So when you go into your build, because the code analysis is giving us information about the quality of our application. So when you go to your build definition, it's just perform code analysis, and you can tell it's as configured, or you can specify always. There was a great suggestion by Dennis to not disable the code analysis in the debug configuration and enable it in the release configuration. And then you can put it as configured because we are building the release configuration on the build. But it is possible that not every team is smart enough or knows has enough information that it needs to set the code analysis in the release configuration, and we still want to have that information. Well, then put it on always. The downside is that it will also give you the code analysis of the test projects. So that's where you can specify the code analysis. Then there was another thing, that was the code metrics. I don't see any code metrics in here. And there was a long request that we want to see the code metrics in the build. It was not possible. But I think 3 months ago, they released a command line which you can use to calculate the code metrics. So we can use the code, we can modify our template and call that command line application to create the code metrics. So when we go back to, where is it? Did I close it again? So when I open the custom template, one of the latest activities that I have done is calculate the code metrics. And because it's a command line file, and because we can run any activity, it is pretty easy to add that. Now I only have to find it. So where is it? Is it here? No, it's not here. Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I cannot find it. I don't know the exact syntax of the command line, but it is pretty simple. There is the invoke process activity. So that just gives you the ability to execute something. So imagine that it is it's called metrics.exe something, and with the right arguments, and you can have that metrics, and the output of it is an XML file, and that XML file you can query again. So now you can, if you have a very smart template, then you can add a query activity in here and report all the methods, for example, that have more than 10 lines or whatever metric you want to report on. So that's how you can do that. So then I wanted to, are there any questions? I want to leave this now behind the modification of the build process template. Are there any questions on this? No? Okay. So the next thing I wanted to show you is the symbol server. So we have seen the build definition. And in this process, you saw over here the source and symbol server settings. And now, of course, I've taken the wrong one. And the only thing you have to do is to index the sources and to specify where it will be stored. So symbols is just a directory on my machine. And when you look into the directory, it has just some PDB folders in there, and of all those PDB folders, it has some unique identifiers, so it can hook the DLL that is executed to a specific PDB version. So how can we use it? I have over here a very simple application, closed solution. I want to go to my source control and open my Hello World solution. It's in here. Yes. So I have over here a very simple solution. It is just telling me which version number I'm running, and then it's just looping and telling you hello. So Control F5. So this is what it does. Great application. Now I have, and build drops, I have this hello world also, and there are some versions in there, and let's see if this one works. So now I have an old version. It was created this morning, and I want to attach to it. Well, before attaching, make sure we don't. Oh, by the way, here's the metrics result. So this is the result of the metrics. So it should be somewhere in the template, but I couldn't find it. Let's delete all this. So we don't have the PDB anymore. So we only have the executable. This is what how you ship it to the customer. And now I can attach to my, probably it's called Hello World, yes. And attached. Wow. It doesn't have any sources. Come on, locals window. Doesn't work. Help. What did I do wrong? That is always the case when you try certain these things. Oh no, I have to choose. Enable the debug mode, change to debug mode. Oh, it's just a warning, I guess, I hope. Well, these are the demo gods, you know, when I stopped practicing this, it still works. So I don't know what, but what you should see when it is set up correctly, you are able to debug this, and you can use the step in and the step out and so on, and you can see the values of the variables. So if you are and if you have the source code, then it is, for example, with branching, it is even possible to get the source code and step through the lines again. So this is very powerful, and especially when you also have the IntelliTrace, then with the PDBs, it's just great. You don't have to ship the PDBs and still have the PDBs around, and you don't have to store them manually. It's just a symbol server, and it will automatically find which PDBs to find. So you can also do that by the Hello World, and I told you it was possible by creating a MIDI dump. So over here, there's the create dump file. And it is just writing a DMP file to a temporary location. And I can use this path and open it in Visual Studio. And you can debug it in mixed mode. And then you would be able to see, I see the process architecture is maybe not right, but anyway. You would be able to see what's happening in here, and also go into the to source code and so on to get more information about this executable and what's happening. So I'm so sorry about the break of this demo. In when you build a DLL, it has a unique identifier. And that unique identifier is the name of the folder that you saw in the symbol store. You saw that? The name of the folder? No. So in here, for the Hello World PDB, for example, you have these folders, and this is the unique identifier of that DLL. And here's just a PDB store. So that's how it works. Any more questions? No? Okay. Yeah, so the simple server is just creating a new share on any machine. And just fill in the build definition, the location of the symbol store. That's all. So the question was, how can I set it up? It is nothing special. And very easy to use. Yeah. So the last thing I wanted to show you, and it was an eye opener for me. I always wanted to know. Well, sometimes the workflow is very nice. Sometimes the old MS Build TFS 2008 MS Build targets files are very nice. And when do you want to use what? For me, the targets file work very good with files and with the item groups and so on. And work much better than the workflow. But I don't want to go back to that model and use the upgrade template, because the build process template is wonderful. You have a template and you can use it on all your builds. So how can I now still use that great file thing, for example, for deployments, and also use the process templates? And it is pretty easy. I have the when I have a build over here, and I go into a process, and I have the items to build. I specified over here a solution, but I don't have to specify a solution. I can also specify, for example, a targets file, and now it's also building that targets file. And then when I'm looking in the targets file, then it should look familiar. It's just old plain MS Build. So now you can use the old MS Build syntax to do great stuff. And when you run, when you have this integrated, and you run your build with the logging verbosity, so the logging verbosity tells you how much detail you get into your log files. So when you run it in the diagnostic mode, then and when it is finished, well, you see you get a lot of information in there. When it is running the targets file, then you also see all the information what is available when it's executing the targets file. So it will also show you all the variables that you have access to in your targets file. And one of the things, for example, is the is it somewhere over here? Yeah, over here. Two projects, the targets, view log file. And so you can see that I have a lot of variables that I can use, including, for example, my current source directory. So this is how you can set up, for example, your automated deployments. So we're talking about when you see the slides, we're talking it compiles. Well, we have seen that. You can just do the compilation, you can do the gated check-in, or you can do the continuous integration. We said that it has to satisfy the standards. We have seen that. Well, we didn't see that, but you believe me on my blue eyes, that it has the code metrics, it has the code analysis, that you can also, do the style cop. Anybody knows what style cop is? Only a few persons. What code analysis is about code, style cop tells you if the code looked nicely, if the variables have correct names and these things. So that's how you do the standards. So there was one way, one thing that is left, and that is the validation. So we all know that we can do unit testing, and adding unit testing to your build is very, very easy. I have over here my Hello World application with one unit test, and just by adding this to my solution, and in my build definition, let's put this back, I say automated test, run all tests that satisfy this pattern. So everything that has test in itself will now automatically run. And I already have that hello world, and you can see over here that there's one test run, and you can see the test results, and all my unit tests have passed. So that's how easy it is to add the unit test to your application. Oh, sorry, to the build. But there is in 2DFS 2010, there's more. We talked about unit testing, but we also talked about smoke testing. You want to do some quick verification if your most used scenarios are still able to run. So you want to test on your user interface. We can do that with coded UI tests. Is that a new term? No? Yes? No response? Marcel will tell you much more on the coded UI test. I will only show you that it is there and how easy it is to add that to your build. So I have another solution. I hope it isn't here. Of course, that's not the place. Source control. I have over here a calculator. And the calculator is, again, very simple. So it's just telling me that when you add two numbers, that it shows the result. And what you can do is just add a new test project, create a coded UI test. In that coded UI test, you can record the steps that you want to, how you want to test your application. So what I did is just press record, enter value 4, enter value 6, generate the method vilwaardes, and then tell them that it has to check if the result is 10. So when I run this test, it will enter 4 and 6 and check if the result is correct. And to show you that it actually works, there is over here a calculate, and I can do plus 1. No, that's not what I wanted. So now I'm running the unit test. It adds 4 and 6, and that's... Oh, then I have to build this one, of course. Oh, I know what's wrong. Sorry. No, that's not wrong. 4 and 6 is 11. No, still 10. So something is happening with it's not building correct on the correct location. So if this was the location where the calculator was built, I don't want to show you only breaking demos, so I'm gonna fix this one. Well, this seems fine. Oh, I see. This is main 2 and not main. So, now running it. Now it should fail. 4 and 6 is 11, exactly. So now it fails, and you can verify your application and your coded UI test. And what you want to do is, let's first check in this, and what you want to do is have that in your build. So when I'm now running my calculator build, it should actually run that that test. And let's see if it works. No, it does not work. And it is not working because it has to somehow interact with the desktop. So how you can do that? The best approach is use the test manager and set up an environment and use test agents and blah, blah, blah. Go to my session on Friday morning. You will get more info on that. A quick solution is the following. When you have your administration console where you do your build configuration, there is some things. So the build consists of a controller. You see that over here. And an agent, which you see there below. And it is all controlled by an executable. And in this case, it isn't a service. And a service cannot interact with the desktop. So that's why it's failing. So what you can do is stop the service and make it an interactive process. So come on, properties. And of course, this is, you only do this in demos. You don't do that in production. So if the properties work, so now I make it an interactive process. I start it again, and now you see a command console. Console come up, and so the executable that hosts the build service will now be run. But the fun thing about this is that when somebody presses escape, your build won't run anymore. So that's why it won't do this in production. But if I now run my my build, and I don't do, I'm doing nothing, and we probably will see the application come up very shortly. There was a question over there? Okay. Oh, yeah, thank you. Well, not, you want, you know, I wanted to show you how a cute icon looks like. Let's stop this one. I don't need it. So let's see how fast it is. Not very fast. This poor machine. Oh, okay, here it is. So now my build does the verification. And my build will break, hopefully, because we have still, the new edition theory. Come on, break. It will break anyway. So when we do a recap, so we have the quality assurance, the standards, the code analysis, the code metrics you can work with. We did the validation with the unit testing and the coded UI. We always have a deployable application. With that, I mean that we have now the gated check-in, and with the gated check-in, you only have source control of sources in your source control repository you accept, you trust, because you can also add some smoke testing to your gated check-in, and there is only compilable code in the source control repository. You can do the automated deployments to the development or test. You can do that either if you have web applications with MS Deploy, a very powerful mechanism. Or you can do it with, for example, your targets file. And you have the wonderful demo about the debug support for the deployed versions with the symbol server. So with that, I want to thank you. And if you have any questions, I will be here. I will leave because I have to support my pregnant wife. So thank you.